Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Today in the Grave Talks, related to evil, conversation with Sam Beltrusis. We all come from somewhere. We have no choice about who or what kind of people came before us, yet we share their DNA and traits. What would one do if they discovered that several of their ancestors were directly responsible for such horrific acts as the Lizzie Borden murder or the Salem witch trials? Today's guest has had that exact experience. Sam Beltrusis, he joins us to share his story and about his new book covering his journey of learning these connections related to evil on the Grave Talks.
So related to evil was something that started in April of 2019. I just finished publishing my book called Wicked Salem, and I was at a book, my book launch party, which was in the Hawthorne Hotel in Salem. And I got a call from my mother, and my mother was like, "Sam," and my mother's Southern. She's like, "I think we may have burned witches." And I'm like, "Mom, you know, they were hanged, not burned, but give me some names." And so she actually gave a list of names that turns out that we are related. My family on my mom's side is related to the Putnam family, who were the bad guys during the Salem witch trials. So that kind of began my journey of self-discovery and finding out more about the lineage. And so it started from there. And I will say that a lot of things in my life made sense because I had multiple encounters in Salem, Massachusetts, while giving tours and while being in Salem for several years as a tour guide, that was now explainable. There was something there, and I had to explore it more. So related to evil is basically looking into my family lineage and sort of this discovery of not only being related to the Putnam family, but also being related to Lizzie Borden.
How interesting. This obviously is kind of a random phone call you get from your mom saying, "Hey, Sam, I think we might be related to the people that burned witches." Is your mom someone who does a lot of research on this sort of stuff? Did it take you by surprise when she uncovered this?
Yes. I thought it was very random too. So it was actually the day of my book launch, and my mother, out of the blue, calls me, and I felt like, looking back at it, it did feel kind of serendipitous. And yes, my mother, who is very much into genealogy, she was really looking into her father's lineage.
Sure.
And it's something that she started, I would say, about 10 years ago, and she would kind of uncover things, and I'm like, "Oh, Mom, this is awesome." She didn't really know my, you know, she has read some of my books, but it really wasn't, she wasn't trying to find a link to us in Massachusetts or in New England. So it was something that I was not expecting at all, and the fact that she called the day of the book launch at Wicked Salem, and I was in Salem and had an experience while giving a lecture manager at the Hawthorne Hotel. It just felt like it was meant to be, and it felt like I had to, something was there and I had to dig deeper.
Yeah, I mean, it just sometimes those things come when you least expect them, and you know it. You know it on the inside that there's something that you want to dig deeper into. When you were living there, prior to knowing about this connection, you said a lot of things kind of started to make more sense to you. Did you suspect that there was something else going on with you, you know, internally, spiritually, that there was a connection there that you weren't aware of? Like, was there anything like that going on prior to the knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was a tour guide in Salem for about 10 years, and my first book, Ghost of Salem, was my bestseller. And when I write my books, I'm really big about immersion journalism. So I literally spend time, I sometimes move to the location, or in the case of Salem, I actually started working in Salem. And I felt strongly connected. And other things that were happening while I was giving tours is I was attracting descendants of the victims of the Salem witch trials. So, I have other tour guide friends I'm like, you know, do you guys have descendants on your tours a lot? And they're like, yeah, you know, once in a while. I would have it every day. Like,
wow.
I would have 3 to 4 descendants of Rebecca Nurse, who was a sweet grandmother who was executed in 1692, and, you know, descendants of Giles Corey. And, you know, it kept going and going. So I remember thinking while I was giving tours that it felt weird. And, you know, as I was moving forward, giving tours in Salem, other things would happen, like having experiences. I had a situation where I was giving a lecture, sort of like a mock seance on the eve of Halloween, and a few years before 2019, and I ended up getting an attachment that nearly killed me. Mm-hmm. So I had that situation, and looking back at it, I do feel like all the, especially the paranormal activity, was tied to the fact that I was related to the Putnams.
How interesting. Why do you, I mean, it's such a weird thing that people would be on your tour at such a frequent rate that have that connection to the people who were killed as being called witches. Why do you think that is? That you, I mean, obviously, you know, full circle, we see what happened here, but how does that happen? How are those people driven to you? What's the logistics on something like that?
I don't know. And it's something that's still kind of, I'm dumbfounded. I'm like, why did this happen? And looking back at everything in hindsight, it all kind of makes sense now. But mm-hmm. there were things like, people telling me their stories, and also they were just finding out that they were related to like the Corwin family, like the bad guys, or generally it was victims of the Salem witch trials. And I became friends with several of these people on my tours, like my good friend Dana Mason, who is a high priestess witch, and went on one of my tours in Salem. And turns out while I was giving the tour, she also started digging into her ancestry, and she was related to Elizabeth Howe. So not only did I pull them in, I pulled people in who didn't know that they were related. And after my tour, it kind of, it emerged. So I felt, looking back, it feels like it was meant to be. And I was kind of being called there, whether I liked it or not, you know, it was,
yeah.
And I remember finding out at the day of and being so emotionally drained and in tears, because imagine something that you talked about and you studied and you were passionate about. And my passion was always to give a voice to the victims of the Salem witch trials. And, my tours were special because I think that's maybe why I pulled in so many descendants of victims, is because people, I would cry on my tour and people would cry with me, and we would get into the, who they were as people, as opposed to just like caricatures, and really talk about who, you know, what this meant, how history repeats itself over and over again, mm-hmm. When it comes to the Salem witch trials of 1692. So I think that it was looking back, I feel like it was meant to be, and it was serendipitous, and it was weird, and it was an amazing journey that I had to chronicle. I had to put into my book Related to Evil.
Sure. I mean, it's such an interesting concept. I mean, obviously, you had nothing to do with burning witches. You were not around at that time. And neither did any of these people. Did they know much about the ancestors that they had other than, you know, what we have that's documented? There wasn't that, oh, yeah, I remember going over there for Sunday dinner with my great-great-great-great-great-grandma. So we're all from a completely different place in time, but we're looking back in history. Do you think that's something where it's the universe, it's something that is doing something to correct itself, where it's this, you know, full, you know, 180 or 360, where you learn about, you know, the sins of the past, if you will, and it's kind of a coming around to in today's time, saying, yeah, this was wrong, we understand it, and we're recognizing the errors of the past?
Absolutely. I feel like I was put into the situation to give postmortem peace to the wrongs that happened 300 years ago. I think that, you know, now that I've put things into perspective and almost finished with writing the book related to evil and looking at, not only am I related to the Putnams, but also the Borden family. And that's another situation where I've written several books that mm-hmm. had the Borden murders featured in it. And I just feel like that it's my job as someone who not only is a historian, author, but also I identify as a clairvoyant now, and using that of those abilities to connect with my ancestors and to give them somehow postmortem peace.
Sure. And to always, you know, to have that connection for so many years, have that interest, have the passion in these specific topics, in these specific people, in these specific places. How far back does that go for you as far as being drawn to those topics? Obviously here in life over the last 10, 20 years, you've written about these sort of things. Does it go back even further? Does the interest go into childhood?
It does. I mean, I grew up in Florida. Mm-hmm. So the idea that I'm related to all these major players in New England is shocking in itself. And so my dad was in the Navy. My mother was in Florida. I moved here in the 1990s, and I was a communications major in college. But I also was very, very fascinated with the Salem witch trials. I kind of focused on the Holocaust first, which was another weird, like, why am I so drawn to the Holocaust? Mm-hmm. Like studying the Holocaust and look into, like, why the aggressive male psyche would do what it did. And it had to do with the fact that what happened during the Holocaust repeats itself. And my professor was like, look into the Salem witch trials. And I'm like, okay. And that opened up a can of worms for me that became a lifelong passion in learning more about the Salem witch trials. And the fact that, you know, we have the Crucible, and I've always kind of been drawn to the Crucible, but realizing the Crucible was an allegory, and the witch trials is an allegory to other things. And it does. So the Crucible for me was probably the first time I got really into the Salem witch trials, but also realizing that a lot of the characters that were featured in the Crucible were based on real people, but that wasn't their true story. So untangling the myths and misconceptions associated with the Salem witch trials has become a passion since falling in love with the Crucible and realizing that these people were people and they had stories to tell and they want their stories to be told correctly.
Sure. So as you dug into this and you make this kind of amazing connection that, oh my God, I'm related to these people. I mean, how does that journey, you know, begin and continue for you after you get that call from your mom?
So I get the call from my mother in April of 2019 and just tears, emotion. And my mother didn't, of course, spill the other connections at that time because she felt like I couldn't handle it. Mm-hmm. So a few months later, I talked to my mother. I'm like, okay, mom, I'm ready. Who else are we related to? And she's like, well, we're related to the Borden family. And that was to me a little less emotional and a little bit more terrifying because I mean it's the Borden case. Lizzie Borden was something that I have demonized as an author in a sense that I kind of presented her in a caricature and not as a full person, and that began my journey of getting to know my cousin Lizzie Borden and really spending time at not only the the location where the murders took place in 1892. And something to point out, the date, it's exactly 200 years after the Salem witch trials. So we have 1692, where 20 innocent men and women were executed for witchcraft. And my cousin, Ann Putnam Jr., was the major, in my opinion, afflicted girl, an instigator accusing 62 people. And then in 1692, there was a heinous double homicide in Fall River. And my cousin was accused and acquitted of murdering her father, Andrew Borden, and her stepmother, Abby Borden. So that's also serendipitous. Even the history is serendipitous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, digging into that, and that being another one of the things that you have had to put a lot of focus on prior to even knowing that connection. So give me some more into the story here of putting together this book. And what were you looking for? Obviously, you find the fact out that you're related. What else, what are you trying to find there? What kind of story are you trying to tell with this project?
So the project is really following my journey when I first find out that I am connected, or our family on my mom's side is connected to the Putnams, and also putting all the pieces together where I look back at other things that happened in my life that was kind of preparing me for what was about to unfold. And this was in 2019 when I first found out about the Putnams, and I have given tours at the Lizzie Borden house, and I'll be honest with you, I was terrified to actually go there. I had multiple nightmares associated with the Lizzie Borden murder house for many years. So that was a case that I had written about and investigated, a paranormal investigator and researcher, but I also had major reservations to dig deeper. And so after finding out the Lizzie Borden lineage, it took me some time for I had to accept the fact that we were tied to Lizzie Borden, not once, but actually twice. And the connection is deeper than even the Putnam family. And so we have two sides, and we're tied to a woman named Innocent Borden Cornell. And or Cornell Borden, and she, Innocent Cornell Borden, was a figure who was recently uncovered in genealogy, because we knew her in the books as Innocent Lake Borden, and we always knew that she was the matriarch of the Borden family, but what we didn't know is, or figure out, that she was the daughter of Thomas Cornell, who was actually executed in the 1600s for murdering his mother, Rebecca Briggs Cornell. And he was executed, but he actually probably didn't do it. A ghost was used in testimony. It was called spectral evidence. And the ghost of his mother basically appeared to her brother. And he said that Thomas Cornell pushed her into a fire. And so it began the beginnings of our family lineage in the States, in this side of the world, was started with a crime that happened in the 1600s.
That's amazing. Gosh. So the Putnam family, give us some more, context on the family and what makes them so unique, so interesting. And what kind of some of their history was, because you obviously know it, but for the audience that doesn't know a ton about them, give us some more of the context there.
Well, so when my mom first started doing the genealogical research, the first thing that she uncovered is that our relatives, two generations back, by my grandfather's father, was originally from Portsmouth, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know that. We actually didn't know that we were originally from Rhode Island. And that, to me, that alone was kind of shocking, because I have lived in New England for since the 90s. So that was the first time where there was something, I knew something was up. You know, I'm like, oh, we're from Portsmouth, Rhode Island. And I remember my mother saying, Stan, we're, you know, our family's from Portsmouth, Rhode Island. I'm like, Mom, it's Portsmouth, not Portsmouth. and then she started digging deeper into that family. So we were, the direct line is the Gould family, and the Gould family, believe it or not, actually accused innocent people of witchcraft too. So it's Priscilla Gould Putnam is our great, great, great grandmother. She's the one who also was the matriarch of the Putnam family. And the Putnams were in Salem Village. So at the time, it's modern day Danvers. And some of the family members were not bad guys. There was a branch of the Putnams that included Thomas Putnam, who was Ann Putnam Jr.'s father, who was the major accusers. But getting back to the Gould family in Portsmouth, they actually accused Rebecca Nurse's mother of being a witch 10 years before the witch trials. So not only did I have major accusers in 1692, I had accusers 10 years prior with Rebecca Nurse's mother. And something that people don't realize, Rebecca Nurse is actually one of three sisters who were accused of witchcraft. So her sister, they were the Town sisters. So we have Rebecca Nurse, who is the more well-known victim of the Salem witch trials. We have Mary Eastie, and we have Sarah Coyce. So those three sisters were all accused of witchcraft, and two of them were executed. So the Putnams were, Ann Putnam Jr. was the oldest daughter of the Putnam family. She was neighbors to a lot of the people that she accused. And Ann Putnam Jr., looking back at her story, she was 12 years old during the Salem witch trial. She ended up accusing 62 people of witchcraft, which to me is amazing. It's like unbelievable that someone could accuse that many people. I strongly believed that Thomas Putnam, her father, was the ringleader with her. So these were people that were Putnam family enemies, whether they owned property or they had a life that that the family longed for, like Rebecca Nurse had a lovely family. She was a grandmother. She had children. Their family was thriving. The Putnams were not. They were not thriving. And Ann Putnam Jr.'s mother, also Ann Putnam, she was having miscarriages, and so there was a lot going on. It wasn't just land grab or money. It was jealousy. And also there was the threat of actual witchcraft. I think a lot of people thought that witches were real and the devil was real, and it was very much a part of the fabric of Salem Village in 1692. And Ann Putnam Jr. believed strongly that the visions she was having that were used to accuse innocent people of witchcraft were real. I think that she really thought she was doing the right thing by accusing these people of witchcraft. And then something flipped with Anne, and she actually lost everything. So her father, Thomas, died young, and so did her mother. And she was left with the family farm and the family land, surrounded by people who hated her after the Salem witch trial. She was a rock star in 1692, and she was the most hated person in New England probably after the Salem witch trials. So she lived a pretty miserable life after, and she was the only one of the afflicted girls who apologized. So she actually wrote an apology, and I always kind of jokingly say it's a faux apology because it she didn't actually read it in church. But the Reverend Samuel Green did, and it felt like she didn't take responsibility for what she did. She said that she was deluded by Satan, and Satan deluded her, and that caused her to accuse innocent people of witchcraft.
Because that was going to be one of my questions, is why were all these people accusing their neighbors, essentially, of witchcraft back in their day? Now, obviously, the easy out is Satan made me do it. But I mean, what is is it different factors in different cases for who got accused? Was it basically just kind of one of those things where you can say this out loud, and whether or not it's true, it doesn't matter because public opinion will pretty much destroy you? I mean, an example today would be is if someone accused an individual of being a child molester, if you will, and then right. but they aren't. Even that getting out there will destroy that person's life. Is it that sort of thing? Was it? Why were people doing this?
Yeah, so it was definitely a storm of different things going on, and people asking why did the Salem witch trials happen, and there are theories that are, you know, it was a land grab. So the people that were being accused had property, and the people that were accusing them wanted their property. And that is true in a few cases, and I think specifically for Rebecca Nurse. I think there's also, you know, but that doesn't explain the town baker woman, Sarah Good, who was accused and executed for witchcraft too. And so there was all sorts of reasons why these people were accused of witchcraft. And I think the biggest underlying factor were women and men who challenged the status quo. And if they, like Bridget Bishop, who was the first to be executed and the only one to be executed by herself, she was accused of being a witch 10 years prior. And a lot of the people that were ultimately accused did have accusations in their past. So they had done something like Bridget Bishop, for example. She would always fight with her husband. She went through multiple husbands who died mysteriously. So her husbands would fight with her publicly, and they would just kind of mysteriously die. And so the story was that she was killing her husbands. And looking back at it, a lot of the people that were accused, they weren't martyrs. So they had things about them that could have been raise an eyebrow today, like Giles Corey, who was the gentleman who was pressed to death over a 2-day period. He murdered somebody before the Salem witch trial. So he actually took a stick, a club, and beat one of his farmhands to death. And it was so he was definitely like a marked man. And when he did commit the murder, he was able to buy his way out of it. But he ultimately paid the price as a victim of the Salem witch trials, and also executed in the most heinous way, which was conceived by my cousin, Ann Putnam Jr. She had a dream that Giles Corey was pressed to death, and she passed him on to her father, and that was used. Ann Putnam Jr.'s dream was used to actually come up with the idea of pressing Giles Corey, which a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
So it's so strange. It's such a strange thing, and it's a perfect storm of reasons why people were accused. And it also was misogyny, but there were men that were executed too. So it's all sorts of things.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of it is, you know, there's people in society that they just didn't like, and there wasn't a ton of evidence to do much about them. So, hey, if we say this heinous thing, we know what's going to happen. I mean, was there any sort of, you know, obviously, there were Salem witch trials, quote unquote. But I mean, what sort of evidence did they cook up to justify the execution of these people?
Well, you know, it was weird because it was kind of like something that was kind of prepping itself for many, many years. So even if you look back to my ancestor, Innocent Cornell, and her father, spectral evidence was used to accuse him of killing his mother. And so the ghost of his mother appeared apparently to one of the victims, the brother of the man that was executed, and said that the son pushed Rebecca Briggs Cornell into the fire. So spectral evidence was something that was used throughout for many years prior to the Salem witch trials. And of course, we have other witch trials that happen in New England, specifically in Boston, where other forms of tests, like saying the Lord's Prayer perfectly. If you weren't able to say the Lord's Prayer, and in a lot of the innocent women who were accused in Boston, they were not from, you know, they would have accents, or they had, their Lord's Prayer was different. You know, there was different kinds of Lord's Prayers back in the day, like a word was off. So that was a test that was not, they weren't going to be able to pass that test. And by the time of the Salem Witch Trials, spectral evidence was brought back as a form of evidence. And spectral evidence is where someone would have a vision of someone, you know, afflicting them, or like they would see them, this person signing the devil's book. And Ann Putnam Jr. was one of the major accusers, and she had some really vivid dreams and visions that were actually used as evidence in court.
I mean, and these are things that today would never be admissible in court, but were so accepted back in that time.
Yeah, and a lot of the stories were so over the top. You know, like they were like, I had a vision of Goody Nurse walking with the devil and signing the devil's book, and you know, Ann Putnam Jr. would have visions of what appeared to be several of the townspeople, and these are people that she knew, gathered in the woods and having, you know, like apparently like a witch's Sabbath in the woods, and they actually accused and ultimately executed who was the town Reverend George Burroughs, who was in Maine at the time, but owed the Putnam family about $400. He borrowed money because being a reverend back in those days was such a tough thing, and you didn't get paid. And he left because he wasn't getting paid. And he was brought back from Maine, and the Ann Putnam accused him of being a witch, and not only being a witch, but being the devil himself, and being the ringleader in this sort of this witch's Sabbath that was happening in the woods of Salem Village. And So yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on there in 1692, and it was a lot that was today would seem crazy, but not really though, because if you look at what is happening now, and even a lot of what was going on back then, you could say that it was you know, maybe Ann Putnam Jr. is clairvoyant like me, like maybe we were both clairvoyant, and she was actually having paranormal related experiences, but I do think that now, thank God, that the court system is not actually using spectral evidence as actual evidence. But I've been blown away by some of the things that have been used in modern day courts and modern day situations and politics, where it repeats itself over and over again.
It does. People don't ever really look back and realize the errors in their ways in any sort of mass. And that's how that happens. How quickly, because you said, okay, so she was one of them was just, you know, kind of the hero of the day at the time when the witch trials were going on and these people were being executed, but then ended up living a life you know, kind of off by themselves, almost being a pariah of society. How quickly did society turn around to say, okay, we were all about this, but now we're really not, and that person was crazy for saying all these things?
Yeah, so it was about a year after. So the witch trial started early in 1692, and it was a particularly hard winter. So there was people that were struggling with food. There was a lot of hysteria that was happening in the area. And about a year later, it got to the point where their friends, their family were getting accused of witchcraft. And there was a point where Governor Phipps stepped in, and he's like, enough is enough, because his wife was accused of being a witch. And so people started saying, hey, there's something wrong here. And it was a process of a few months to at the very end, which is about, it was around like 12 to 13 months of actual witch trial hysteria. But the backlash was quick and brutal. The people that were the bad guys during the witch trials were quickly vilified by the community, and to the point where they were so angry towards the bad guys that George Corwin, who was the sheriff during the Salem witch trials, had to go in hiding. A lot of these people had to go in hiding because there was so much anger directed toward them, and rightfully so. I mean, their family members were executed, their loved ones were executed, and there was so much bloodshed that happened, and it was done in a kind of like a way where the town would gather around the executions, and they saw how brutal and savage it was to be hanged or to be pressed to death. And those images were very much motivating factors to get the bad guys after. And so it switched pretty quickly.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Sam. In part two, how quickly did society turn around to recognize that the Salem witch trials were horribly wrong? How did the journey of learning about Sam's relation to the Salem witch trials and Lizzie Borden change his life? And does Sam believe that his ancestors, who are responsible for the murders of the witches, feel remorse on the other side? Those questions and a lot more in part two. To hear it, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our show. Sign up to be one. Just go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Or if you like the Patreon app, that's where you sign up. Go to Patreon or patreon.com in the app and search The Grave Talks. You'll find us there. $5 a month gets you access to all of our interviews in their entirety, all of it commercial free, hundreds to binge upon, advanced episodes. It's all there right now for you. Thegravetalks.com. Until next time, for all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.